You're listening to Your Rivers Are Wrong, the podcast.
Good morning, or afternoon, or evening, or good night. You know, people are hanging out at night too.
Or welcome. Good night, yeah.
Yeah, who knows? Welcome to the Your Rivers Are Wrong podcast. It's me. My name is Marla. And there's another host with me.
It's me. It's Dante.
Yeah, the other guess co-host. So. You know, we're changing it up here. I don't know why, but I'm already halfway in, so let's keep going. In this podcast, in case you didn't know, we talk about the wonderful whimsies of world building, the arts, the aesthetics of storytelling and setting up a setting and everything that comes with that. And
exactly.
We're doing pretty good. We're on episode 48 now. We had to check it ourselves right before we started recording because we've done a lot of them so far, which is great.
Yeah.
How you been, Dante?
I've been good. I've been hanging out. It's been a hectic week.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's shaping up to be hectic.
How come?
Well, last week I recorded a video about Pathfinder, the game Pathfinder 2E, for a live stream. And then people were like, oh, that's a pretty good game. Can you do it again? And I'm like, yeah, sure. I gotta learn a character by the weekend. So let me just schedule another live stream the week following, which is this week, on Friday. That sounds fine. And, you know, I always try to stream a new game on Monday. So I'm like, okay, Monday stream, Friday stream. Sounds good, right? I see on Twitter, there's an author of a game that looks really cool called Tangled Blessings. We're going to try it out eventually. Mm. And I'm like, wouldn't it be sick if I got the author of the book on a live stream? So I reach out. I'm like, hey, doing this live stream thing for new TTRPG games. When are you free? And she's like, oh, Wednesday sounds great. And I'm like, sure. Let me check my schedule.
Yeah,
see
I got
where
some
that
room
slots
left.
In.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I got some room left. Let me check
I mean,
that Monday,
no.
That Friday. Yeah. So slot that in on the Wednesday. That's
three streams.
Three streams this week. So
that's hard.
Monday,
for
Wednesday,
you.
Friday. Should be fun. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, which I wouldn't say no because they all sound like great occasions, but that's how my week shakes me up. We just did a Monday stream last night. Eyes on the Prize is a game about two con artists faking a marriage to win fame and fortune.
Oh my God, that's
and it's
great.
It's a two-player game, and it is so, so funny. And I really enjoyed it.
Sounds like Spy Family.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I had a blast reading through it because it was, one, a very easy read, and two, the listeners got into it. So,
which was fun. That's also great. That sounds fun and intense. Fun and intense at the same time. Yes.
Yeah. How's your week going, doing, been?
It's going pretty good. I'm at the point now. Here's the button.
Wait. That's a weird way to start a sentence. I'm at a point now.
Okay.
Go for it. No, go for it. Shoot.
I'm at a point now where I have
a
lot of great things that are happening in 1 week.
Mm.
But because I keep saying yes to things, at some point, there's no time left to do the things that you just said yes to. That's where I am now.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of doing any of those things that I said yes to, I just end up doing nothing out of sort of activity paralysis. Yeah.
Yes.
Which
paralysis,
is a problem.
That's a word.
Yeah. I should not do that. I should say no to things if I don't have time for them. But I'm not always good at it. And this week, I'm not good at it. So, you know, I'm ending up being more inefficient than I was before because I am busier somehow.
Yes,
I don't know how that works, but yeah, that's state of mind.
That's the life of a creative, right?
Yeah.
Or a life of a social butterfly.
I guess so. The balancing sucks. I'm so bad at it.
No. I refer to it all the time, and you know this, that there's that one comic where it's like, hey, like sleep, work, video games. And it's like, oh, I have this cool new thing, but I don't have time on my shelf to put it anywhere, unless, and he starts reaching towards the sleep block.
Yep, that's it. That's happening.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I mean, but it's not a bad thing to fill your schedule. It's just, oh my gosh, it's like you got to optimize every hour, every minute to be perfect if you want to pull everything off, you know?
Yeah, and for me, it's also like, I feel like you're more efficient than I am in general. Like,
oh, no,
I feel
no,
like
no,
you,
no.
I feel like this is might be untrue, but I feel like you can fill like 80% or 90% of your day with efficient work. And my sweet spot lies in like 75%. So if I fill up all the other 25%, I just won't do like any percent because I'm too, like the balance is off somehow. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I'm glad I've convinced you I'm like that,
okay.
But I'm really not. My day
maybe it's because
is maybe
I know
like,
you just work instead of sleep. Yeah. Maybe that's it.
My day is like 60% optimal, 30% absolute paralysis. Just lying on bed thinking of all the things I gotta do. Don't drink when, when I'm talking.
Yeah, it's almost as fantastic.
I saw you go, who?
But no.
And probably 10% sleep somewhere in the ballpark of,
sure,
of that little.
Okay.
Yeah, for people listening at home, it is not healthy to plan so much that you feel guilty sleeping.
No, don't do it.
Let it be known. I'm there. I'm right there. And I hope you're not there with me. So.
Yep.
Okay. Anyway, yep. Getting
glad
to
we tackled
our,
that. Yes.
We always want to open up
with
open
some
up
good
every
morals
podcast
to begin with. Yes.
Yeah, with some good life lessons. That's what we're here for.
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. It's not true, Dante. You know what we're really here for?
What are we here for?
We're world building and storytelling.
That's right.
And talking
and
about
storytelling.
It.
Storytelling.
Let's
exactly
do it.
Exactly that. I'm so excited. Okay. You got the topic today. You're opening
I
us up.
I do. Yes. That's very true. Today I want to talk to you about a specific form of storytelling, or perhaps world building more so, and it's vertical world building.
I don't know what that means. Could you enlighten me?
I didn't know either. And like before I had a very specific idea for a very specific vertical city and I didn't find anything about it. And I was like, I guess people don't do that very often. So here's the context.
Okay, go ahead. I got my something in my head, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Save it. How do I say this? To intro this a little bit. Because I've been building for one of my D&D sort of homebrew worlds, right? I've been building a city that's mostly vertical. And by vertical, I mean it's basically a city that's on like pillars on the water, and it keeps building itself higher and higher because the water rises. That's kind of the idea. So what you end up with is a city that's
that's terrifying.
You basically only travel through vertically, like you climb or you like lower yourself, I guess, in any way possible. I mean, we all know by now we love zip lines. There's a bunch of zip lines in the city, obviously.
of course.
But because I was building this out and kind of struggling with it, because one, I guess not a lot of people build vertical cities or similar like that. Two, it's pretty hard to make it efficient or to make it believable that this is a useful way of building your city. So I thought, why not just talk about it? And I also thought about some other ways of storytelling in a very linear way. For instance, there's, just to start things off, there's a movie called Snowpiercer. I feel like we might have discussed it earlier, where the whole movie just takes place in a train. The whole plot progression kind of happens as they traverse through the train and get closer to the engine room, which is a sort of holy grail of this movie. it's not vertical, but it's very like, it has a very specific line that the story travels through, literally the train. So I think we could say a lot about this. So I want to hear your thoughts is what I want.
Well, I mean, my immediate thoughts are, it must be difficult to build a vertical city.
I guess so. Yeah.
I think first and foremost, it's been a minute since we've just had a straight world building topic. We usually lean a little bit into we've leaned into the storytelling quite a bit, but straight up world building, could be fun.
Yeah.
Let's see. So it's almost as if we're jumping into a prompt here, but let me try to reason what this vertical city is. You're saying that the water keeps rising.
Yes.
So they have to build upwards to avoid the water.
Kind of, yeah. I feel like, I mean, we don't have to go super into this because then it's got to be a real problem.
It's like Tetris.
But we can, yeah. But basically, the sort of premise of this is a swamp city, kind of. And after years and years of, I don't know, climate change or, I don't know, random other magical intervention because now the seas are rising. That's the occasion here. The city, unlike all the other cities in the surroundings, started to sort of ramp itself up on wooden platforms and make sure that they were high enough to sort of beat the water to flooding their houses and stuff. And they thought, okay, once we're high enough up, we're good. And then the seas just kept rising and rising. And at some point, you know, the same problem happens. And before they know it, they're sort of doing this weird, who's going to build their house the highest before the water reaches it race. And then before you know it, you have an entire sort of towering structure of city. That's kind of the premise of it, or the idea that got stuck in my brain.
I mean, I love it. in real life, climate people are like, oh, a whole lot of cities are going to be underwater in 50 to 100 years. Better start planning how to build high.
Kind of, yeah.
The first thought is like, Are they pulling like resources from surrounding areas to like build high? Where are they getting the materials if the water is rising?
Good question.
Are they like, diving that. For it?
Maybe. That would be interesting. I mean, you would think at some point that they would just build like giant floaters, right? That it would just become a boat keep building. But I feel like this is a sort of space race, but now it's a sort of vertical who can build their house the highest race. I don't know.
I love it.
Yeah, there's a lot to this.
There's less logic, more pride. It's like, I just kind want the
of,
highest
yeah.
house.
It's like a hierarchy now. Yeah. Whoever's house the highest has the biggest chance of survival, I guess.
Okay. Well, in terms of quite literal vertical world building, you could take inspiration from real life. I think, actually, we can call back, and now that it's officially been 4 years, we can call back to the one shot that we first met at. In the setting of that, I wrote, was the city of Estol, which was a kind of like a weird mountain city in the middle of a desert, quite literally like conical vertical, where the original conqueror of this city basically destroyed the city, covered it in rubble, and then built his city on top of it.
Oh, interesting.
And that was kind of the premise of there being like a very tall city, which lent itself to quite specifically a social hierarchy of where, you know, as in real life, the high grounds of any city or country is often owned, if it's not like a literal mountain, is often owned by the rich and powerful because, you know, best view, most protection, yada, yada. And you could kind of figure out somebody's income level depending on where in the city they lived. Did they live at the very, very peak? Did they live in the twisting roads of the middle area? Or did they live at the bottom near like the proper water in this desert? I didn't plan the setting for you. but it also, you know, lent itself to a lot of people living within the city, like underneath, like underground.
Like in the rubble, in the original.
Yeah, within
city.
The rubble.
Right.
Yeah, like there's That's a whole cool. new community there. So I'm thinking with your vertical city, is there a social hierarchy going on here? Is the city big enough that how... I kind of want to ask like the population of this place, because if we establish that, then we know like who's kind of leading these sort of things.
I feel like it's not too big because, you know, how much effort are you going to do before you're going to move away just to another place, right?
That's
but
true.
But I feel like
true.
this is a weird, I'm not sure about the number, right? But not too large. It's not like three houses. There needs to be some sort of structure or some sort of high and low. There needs to be enough people so that there can be a hierarchy at all, right?
Of course.
But I guess this is a weird mix of like residents that have lived, you know, since the water started rising and new people coming to seek fortune or, you know, coming from the drowning villages nearby seeking, you know, a better life. And this is the closest one, I guess. In terms of what you were saying about the sort of... how do you call this? Counterculture? No. Like the sort of underground people still living in the rubble. I would also love for this to be a sort of thing that the city is towering above the water surface, and then actually on the surface are all the boats that are not allowed in the city, and they just form a sort of mini city at themselves because no one can get in the city
slowly rising.
Or I don't know.
Oh, I love that. You could even, and now that this has become a world building exercise,
it's
everyone
okay.
listening can join us.
It's fine.
listen, if the water's rising, there's still infrastructure below the water. What if there's just a whole community that starts forming underwater in this second half of the city and no one's actually looking there? So
interesting.
So you could play that there's three different communities here. The people,
I didn't
the
think
risers,
about the third one. Yeah, that's right? cool.
Like the risers, the divers, and the swimmers or whatever.
Yeah, sure. Wow, that's wild.
And they all have their own little hierarchies and structures and customs and stuff like that. Because if I'm understanding this, if the water's rising here, it's rising everywhere, right?
Yeah, I figure.
So this might pretty quickly become a refuge of people from other places, and people swimming from other countries or cities don't have a place, you know, they haven't already established themselves, so they got to live on the water. And there's like this whole like net that's spreading out around the city, like spreading, because they can spread like laterally. It's like the horizontal city, so to speak.
I know what you mean. Ooh, that's nice. Ooh, like the horizontal city and the vertical city. Wow. And I also love that it's about pride now, because the vertical city is so much more hassle. Like it's not efficient, but because people have started building, they're in the skies. They're the ones higher up, literally. So they feel like they should just stick to their beliefs, right? Even though it's way less efficient than just being on a boat. Yeah.
Listen, people literally live on boats. I mean, they're shackled.
It's very
they're
doable.
Shackled to this.
Yeah.
As I know, since visiting, there are people who probably live in boats.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's true.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like it could be really fun. And this, you're saying you're building out for a setting, a campaign sort of deal?
Yeah, I kind of started this for the as a sort of big pointer location, I guess, in the homebrew one that I did with my roommates and stuff. But then that one kind of fizzled out, so the city never got used. But then I still had this cool city. Yeah, it's so sad.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I feel that. Listen, the one shot I ran 4 years ago for you and crew, I still use that place all the time.
That's so great. I still run
that one. And every time I do, I learn a little bit more about the city. I learn a little bit like about the people living there or the neighbors. Mm. I flesh out a new NPC and I just jot it down. I'm like, next time.
Yeah, that's
lovely. I'll use this person.
You know what also reminded me? Because once I started building this out, I was like, wait, there's so much potential in the vertical space that no one ever does it because cities always are just on land and stuff. Mm. I also immediately was thinking about like walls and stuff, right? Like walls are very often, you know, the sort of ultra famous Chinese wall, but also the fictional ones, right? Like the Ba Sing Se avatar walls or in general, like the sort of the air temples, the upside down ones and stuff. There's a bunch of interesting like vertical world building and avatar that I think is super fascinating. And I think when building out cities, right, I feel like cities are a very great place to have a sort of localized division of things, of people or of, you know, different climates, but then still be one people or one group of, you know, where you can live for a while or for all your life if you want. So the size of it makes it interesting that you can both do these sort of location bound groups or hierarchies, but then still all be part of one culture or, you know, group of people still. And I think there's, based on, of course, where your city is located or where your whatever your world building is located, the vertical aspect is something that really changes a culture drastically. Because
we, of course,
are not used to traversing vertically all the time. Like, we figured out how planes work, and that was like a big deal, a big step, you know? And that's kind of where we left off. But imagine if you're constantly, like, let's just say if you're constantly in this vertical city that we just talked about, right? You will have the most amazing arm strength in the world. Like, all the ladders you're climbing, all the lifts you're, like, traversing through, right? Like, it's a sort of basic example, but it changes so much how you move yourself around. So if you're constantly against gravity, or if you're constantly, you know, letting yourself fall, that's a very different way of doing things. I can imagine it also changes simply the fact how your houses are laid out. You basically won't have a house that's just one story, right? Because all the space that you need horizontally is going to sort of lose space for every other one that's right next to you also wanting to go vertically.
Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe houses are super small and super high, right? I don't know how that will work. But there's a bunch of changes that are very interesting once you start, I guess, building it out like I did. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's a real life phenomenon. How skyscrapers came to be was that cities got too busy.
Oh, yeah. Skyscrapers.
Building horizontally was just not feasible because there wasn't enough land and land cost money. So building up, you could build upwards. And, you know, there's infinite real estate going upwards, you know.
Yeah.
So in New York City, very, very, I wouldn't say uniquely, but... New York City was one of the first that became like an arms race to see who could build the tallest tower.
Right.
Who could, who would have the pride point of being the tallest in New York City, kind of the peak of the Big Apple. There was like a whole thing where the people funding it would buy or afford the tallest needle on the top of the skyscraper.
Right.
Just so they could say that they have the tallest, the tallest thing. Obviously now New York City is no longer the tallest building in the world that's owned by the Burj Khalifa or something like that. I don't know what it's called. But some other place has a very tall structure and we're no longer in the running. But I mean, we could talk about also how the daily life of these residents change if living vertically is the only option. We can even go to the air temples as inspiration. Mm. Now, if you want to, we could talk about like levels of technology. This comes in world building, like how big is the tech? You know, is it like super futuristic? Is it steampunk and medieval fantasy? Is it less? The first thing that comes to mind would be sick is that like every person has like a little glider if they need to descend quickly. They just kind of hop out of the window, like do a couple loop-de-loops on their way down and then exit on the lower floor. And that could be something that's accommodated on multiple levels if that's a culture thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I think you'll basically need so many balconies because then you have a lot of access to all kind of points from the literal sky.
Yes.
So it's not like, I think the main thing is not even walking. It's probably gliding or flying or something like that. Because walking, you know, doesn't bring you anywhere here. Like, it brings you one level and that's it.
And I feel like lifts would be important, you know, the whole pulley lift system.
Yeah.
But probably, you know, you could only use so many of those for a whole city. And even in my head, I imagine in a little steampunk setting, if you want to ascend, you have like a little backpack and you pull a string and a balloon, like a hot air balloon comes out of your back and you just slowly
rise. Oh my God,
that's
wild. Oh my God.
just ascend with your little backpack back to whatever floor you're coming from, because daily life would change. If you're assuming that the city is not very wide and everything to explore is up and down, that's a big deal. And depending on how fast this water rises, could you imagine like, oh, people are like, oh, dang, we lost floor 352 last night.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't think about that. Yeah. What if it goes super fast?
That had like the best bakery. Yeah, I'm thinking that they're rebuilding on 384. There's a little bit of room there, but you know, it's not guaranteed. They might just join the horizontal city and, you know, God forbid.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Yeah, that's wild.
You got to really consider like the people at the lower levels are under the most pressure to ascend, to elevate. Mm-hmm. And if they're stuck there for whatever reason, if like the social climate doesn't allow them to be at the top climbing, they have to like leave. They have to evacuate and move somewhere else. And that requires like joining another floor. And every floor, you know, Tower of Druaga style, might have different cultures, different societies, different hierarchies being like, oh, welcome to floor 358. Sorry, you got to pretend to be a dog for a week before you can hook up.
Oh my God.
Like, be here. You know, it'd be the worst. You'd hate it.
Yeah,
and people reminisce about their old floors. Like, oh, I was on floor 299. Everybody was real kind there. But now on floor 367.
Lost to the water. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm nobody here, you know.
And also, this begs the question. Do you own, like, is real estate still owned horizontally, quote unquote? Like if I own a tiny bakery and there's nothing on top of my roof, do I have free range in whatever I want to build on top of it? Or is that you know, bad luck? If someone builds on top of you, you did it to yourself. You better raise otherwise to claim your sky space, basically. Because I think everyone would own like only a horizontal thing, then I think there's maybe like, I don't know, max 100. No, that's a lot. Max like 50 people that own the entirety of like the vertical space. And I don't think that's going to be useful once everyone starts climbing as fast as they can, right?
Listen, once growing vertically becomes a cultural thing, only the rich and powerful will be able to claim what you called, and I hate this term, it's dystopian, sky space.
It's crazy.
Where they own all the sky above their initial establishment, and only they can build up, you know?
Yeah. And also, I think people would call this such like a traditional way of seeing real estate, right? Because everyone is just used to horizontal cities before this climbing city happened. But now, you know, if I own a bakery and somebody else builds their floor out over on top of my bakery, you know, joke's on you. You should have thought of it before. Yeah.
Listen, a realtor going to you and being like, hey, this is a wonderful spot. Lots of light. You got sky space all the way up to 384. Listen, that's a long time.
Yeah.
Your kids will probably be able to live here until you got to move. And I think that's like a good 40 years.
Oh, that makes me, I don't know how I feel about that. That's wild. Oh my God.
Could you imagine, in this world, could you imagine like in our world, if like your houses had a lifespan? Where it's like, you can live here, but after 40 years, it's underwater.
The water's going to reach it. Yeah. Or what if now the two options become either you climb higher or you just claim your sky space or whatever. You make sure you get, you stay in the air, basically, literally.
I hate coining sky space.
But I love how much I hate it. Yeah. Or the other option is you basically waterproof your entire house so that you can, you know, so that the climbing isn't necessary. But then what does that mean? You won't have access to anything. This becomes a sort of shelter, right? A sort of bunker thing that you have to then like either live in or like if you have no other options, if there's literally no other space to go, if everything around you is built up and you have no money to do, you know, what else can you do against water? Well, waterproof it, I guess. But then that would mean you can never get out, or you would live, you know, an underwater diving life. You need to get up to the city for your goods or whatever, which
That's
nobody's
right.
going to do. Like, how can you get into the city once you're lost to the water? You're not part of the city anymore. I don't know.
I'm telling you, that could be
that's a sad life, dude.
Like the lost could be a whole community that has no choice but to live underwater.
Oh, my God.
You know?
Wild.
And they're just stuck there. And some people will be like, well, that's the end of that. Like, I can't afford any more sky space. I don't have a boat. I can't live on the horizontal city. So listen, I'm stuck here underwater and I got to make do with what I got. There's like a few dozen guys down here. We're working it through. But, you know, we're going to run out eventually.
Yeah.
And you know, waterproofing only lasts for so many years, as is established, of course, by the setting. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there's a time limit on that. And there's a desperation that comes to, I got to claim sky space or I'm going to die underwater in the tomb that I built. You know, it's a little, it's like,
that's dark, dude. But yes, I do love it. Oh my God. That's wild.
This is an unconventional topic, but this is so fun. I hope the city comes to light one day. Let me play it sometime.
Oh,
me,
please.
If you got any one shots, I would love to.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Did you ever, because of course now we sort of ended up prompting this real hard. So, but also I just was curious, did you ever build something specifically vertically like this? Because usually city builds are more divided into like city blocks or, you know, what's closest to the coast or where's the city center and stuff like that. But that all goes away very quickly once you move your whole layout around. Not necessarily vertically, but yeah. I mean, you already talked a little bit about the cool like cone-shaped desert city. That was pretty cool. Any other wild ideas out there? Yeah.
Not too wild. My friend came up with most of this as we were shaping his backstory for a campaign. But basically, he wanted a city on top of a mountain. We called it the Skyward Sanctums. And it was a city
that's cool.
That was blessed by the god of the winds in the setting to never have bad weather. So they were able to live on top of a mountain, immune to cold, immune to snow and rain and storm. And all the land was constantly lush. It was a true paradise.
Interesting.
And they flourished. And they it was a place where, as is normal cultures, if you have time to relax, you have time to work on the arts. So everybody like made music and you know, told stories and were fantastic writers and storytellers there. But there came a point where the hierarchy came to be built, where you got this whole society that is flourishing. Where do people pull their resources? And you realize that it's desolate land all around them. There are no neighboring cities. So it's all the same people for 300 years. Mm-hmm. You either got to learn to branch out or leave paradise and find life elsewhere if you want to prosper. As the money almost cynically funnels towards very specific families and like there become divisions and As time goes on, if everybody's losing their resources, you have to leave paradise to survive. And suddenly, is this place in this nigh unreachable world, is it still paradise? Even if it has all these resources, if you can't have a living, you know?
So is this an issue of space as well? Or is it more like things running out, basically?
It's an issue of isolation. It's when you have no neighbors, you have no allies, you have no enemies. It's the world that forms from an isolated utopia, and you have to kind of wrestle with, is this place still perfect? So even if it's in the perfect spot, if it's surrounded by desolation, if it's void of community, is it still perfect? So it was kind of the political center of our whole campaign. The rest of the places really were like, you know, fight people, journey the seas,
but
adventure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this was a purposefully very isolated place. But then I assume your characters were originally like entering it, right? Or did they did the whole thing take place in the city or did they also enter and leave it?
Well, it was the hometown of one of the characters.
Ah, okay.
So they left, they were sent on a mission to become powerful, to inherit power from the great goddess to this one location and then come back and help establish the power of one very rich family. Mm. Because, hey, we need someone like you to be strong so we can keep our hold on the money and fame and wealth. And within the time that he left, he met the party, he did all his world traveling, and he came back with a greater purpose to liberate the city from its current oppressors. Mm. And that was how that all came to
the
culmination.
Context. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, yeah.
I also wonder how the other cities or villages or surrounding places, or I guess just any other place in the world, looks upon the city then.
It feels like an unreachable place.
Is it the Holy Grail or is it already cynical from the outside because you see there's no
connection. Like a place of myth. As in, like, nobody has visited it in recent years.
Cool.
Obviously, there were grand and, like, brave adventurers who made it there years and years and years past. But since then, the city's not talking to anybody. They're not sharing any resources. There's no point in talking to them because they don't bother anyone. They just enjoy their city in this little corner of the world and do nothing to affect the rest of the world. So so over time, you lose contact with them and they develop their own system and problems and all that. So... yeah, it's a mythical place, and the name Skyward Sanctums was kind of representative of it being too far away to think about.
Yeah. I kind of love that, though, because then suddenly, no matter how perfect your city is, if you don't have connection to the other places in the world, you're still not going to, quote unquote, matter, because literally everyone forgets about it or can't reach you. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was sick. Mm. But that is cool. I like that verticality is kind of the topic.
I guess
that we've
that's the topic.
Here,
yeah. Right? Yeah, for sure. And I wanted to touch upon maybe one more thing, because I think specifically if we're talking about games, right? Very often location, such as a floor or as a street or something linear, I guess I could call it, can be connected to your game mechanics. For instance, leveling up, right?
Sure.
In the example of Snowpiercer, where, short summary, the whole world is basically unlivable and the only people, cultures, I guess, remaining are in a very long train that just keeps driving on this one track endlessly. So within this train, the whole hierarchy is very specific and also very much based on the wagon that you're in. The richer you are, the better wagon you can live in, stuff like that. And it also reminded me of the way that certain levels or, you know, super literal things like boss battles or something can evolve, right? If you tie them to a specific location that works ultra linear, kind of. So either, you know, first floor, second floor, third floor of a samurai temple or whatever.
Sure.
Or, you know, a train that contains the entirety of the world. You can literally see progression happening because it's forced into this linear,
right.
Yeah, located perspective, whatever you want to call it. And I think that's kind of cool too. Like, there's really also very interesting links or connections you can make with your game or story mechanics, like the super literal parts of your story. It's doesn't just have to be cool world building. And I think that's already a little bit what we talked about in, you know, how it affects your characters or how it affects your daily going around this place or indeed how much money or how much space you can claim for your family or for your future or whatever, all that stuff. And I think when you tie something so specifically to a place or to a location that keeps growing or keeps expanding as you level up, you give yourself a very interesting framework within which you can work. Sometimes if you world build, or, you know, if I speak for, you know, being an artist in general, sometimes if you give yourself a very limited amount of space literally to work in, or if you say, I can only do so many iterations of this and then it has to be done, it forces you to be super creative because you have such a specific space that you can only use.
Yeah.
So as a sort of framework or as setting rules for yourself in this way as your world build can also be a very interesting tool to actually do it and to get super creative on a very detailed, hyper-focused kind of level.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And that works out really well too if you're stuck or if you need a very specific thing to be built up, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've run into it in a lot of prompts where the more specific it is, the more creative it gets. If you leave a topic too broad, your mind starts spinning wheels in a whole lot of different directions and it's not exactly conducive to a creative setting. But, you know, if you pinpoint exactly what you want and know exactly the energy you're going for, that's when things kind of shine most brightly.
Yeah, for sure. Ooh, right. Interesting.
Thank you so much for that topic. I guess we're going to wrap this up with a prompt, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't realize this was going to be like very much prompt based already. But, you know, we'll just wrap it up in a nice little end note here.
Sounds good.
I think my prompt is very similar to what we've already discussed now. But, you know, let's just go for it.
Sure.
The prompt is as follows, and we can back and forth or you can just do the whole thing yourself, whatever you feel like. We've come to the final stages of our story, of our quest, and the villain is on the roof.
Okay.
That's the prompt.
Okay. That's the prompt? Oh, that's it? Oh my gosh. Ooh, villains on the roof. Villains on the roof. This sounds like a play.
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'm imagining. Okay, well, now I've got it in my head. This is definitely the climax of a Broadway play.
Oh God, are we going there? Yeah, please.
The music's building up. You know, you could hear like the crescendo of like the strings in the background. Well, it's not a crescendo, but like a high paced
intenseness. Yes,
high paced movement. Definitely the third movement of any sort of classical piece.
I'm here for it.
The main cast is panicking. And the main cast is panicking because, well, actually, now I got the vision. I got the vision. It's here.
Yes, I can see it brewing.
You can see it on my brain, on my forehead, the gears spinning. Yeah, this is it. The kids are the main character. It's a bunch of kids spending a wonderful time.
My favorite characters.
spending a wonderful holiday together, pulled from the very reaches of their far off little houses in like the suburbs and rural areas, and you know, across the waters, the little family reunion. All the kids waiting for Santa.
Oh my god.
Told that he's coming at midnight. It's going to be a thing. There's already a couple presents there. A couple presents, you know, some arrived early. Some Santa did not give. But, you know, they're waiting for Santa's presents. And their parents say, oh, don't stay up till midnight. You know, you don't want to disrupt Santa at work. But, you know, these kids, cunning as they are like, we're smarter than the adults. We can see Santa whenever we want. So they stay up. They stay
so
up.
Edgy.
Clock ticks 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. 11 o'clock, you hear the soft twinkles and the, what's that one instrument they only use during Christmas time? The sleigh bells?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That tells you that a song is indeed Christmas themed when they use this.
The one marker that we all know it from. Hey,
how to turn any song Christmas-y?
How do you distinguish them? Sleigh bells, yes.
And lo and behold, 11:59, the kids begin to hear these sleigh bells in the distance, slowly getting closer and closer. They huddle behind the couch, staring at the Christmas tree placed perfectly next to the chimney, and they watch as the clock ticks, tick, tick, tick. The seconds hand on the clock slowly moving forward, and as midnight strikes, you hear this clock plays a song, plays Silent Night, very low, mournful song for time, for midnight. Nobody's listening, of course, because everybody should be asleep, and they watch as a faint white mist begins to descend through the chimney, filling the room, occluding their vision. And they see a dark, tall, hunched shadow arrive.
Oh my god.
It dispenses throughout the room. Some of the kids are like, I can't see. The smoke is everywhere.
How did this turn into horror Christmas?
And the one kid, who truly believed there's no way Santa could exist, is the only one of a clear view of this large, looming, cryptid-like creature slowly edging towards the tree. And they say, very quietly in their small 8-year-old voice, that's not Santa. The bag swoops underneath the Christmas tree, scoops up the presents that are already there. This thing is not giving presents, it's stealing them. And you can see the large bag with its maw-like mouth begin to gobble up all the presents on the Christmas tree, and the kids have to act. You can see this one kid, he's like, jostles Johnny and Timmy and Delilah. Hey, they're taking over. That's not Santa. That's not Santa.
Oh my god.
Get the weapons. Get something to stop him. They pick up like their little toy hammer. They grab the ceramic plate from the top of the rafters that has the cookies on it. They need something to stop him, and they all charge through this mist towards the creature. The creature looks surprised, and it begins crawling on the floor on all fours, rushing towards this chimney. He begins to suck the mist back towards the chimney as if he was never here, and he begins to climb. You hear the sounds of his claws against the brick walls, and the kids are looking. They're like, the villain's on the roof. He's on the roof. And you hear the sounds of the hooves of whatever amalgamate creature is carrying him through the skies.
This is still a Broadway theater play.
Sure is.
Okay.
Sure is. You got the smoke machines, you know, they're
sure,
figure
yeah.
out reverse smoke uh-huh. eventually. And the kids rush up the stairs.
they go to their bed. Reverse smoke. Sorry, keep going.
Don't worry. The props department
smoke?
Will handle it. The props department can handle
time.
This.
Yeah, it's
we'll
keep
fix
going.
It in post. Don't uh-huh. worry. This is the director pitching the story
to
their props
see it.
Team. Who look mortified.
Yes.
They're running towards their window. They open it up. They pull out all of the birthday balloons from inside their room, because of course it was a tandem Christmas birthday.
Yeah.
They grab all the balloons.
As you do.
And they elevate towards the roof to see this monster beginning to escape. He's getting on this large, like, giant 16-hooved beetle that he's about to disappear on. This mess of, like, gnarled Christmas tree. Ent-like creature climbing onto this beetle, about to fly off. You can hear the hum of the wings as it begins to fly. And as the kids are throwing their toys and their plates at this guy, he begins to take off. But as he begins to ascend, they look to the moon and see a silhouette and the familiar sounds of the sleigh bells that they heard only moments before. Santa's coming. And we'll end the story there.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Wow, I wasn't ready for a Christmas, very Christmassy themed Broadway musical.
It's gonna be a hit. The kids will love it. The kids will love it.
The kids will love it, yeah. Birthdays and Christmas and monster fighting. And also good endings in song.
In song.
Reverse yeah, I'm smoke. Trying to... Excuse me, get me a ticket, please.
I had
please.
A song in my head the whole time. So I can see the vision. If you're listening to this and you're a Broadway director,
please make it
and credit us. All I ask for is the name of the credits. I don't ask for anything else. You can keep the genius. You can keep the money.
I ask for the title of the song. That's called Villains on the Roof.
Villains on the Roof. That's true.
That's all I
we
want.
Need the credits to the name. Right. And we would love box seats for box seats. Is that a Broadway thing? Box seats.
You would know.
What do you call it? I would know it. No, box seats are like for like
I don't know
sports
how
it,
how
stuff.
That's called. Whoa, I don't know. No, wait, don't you have like
orchestra
fancy balconies
seats?
And stuff like VIP seats?
We do have
VIP seats.
Yeah, but like balcony seats aren't always the best because they're kind of far.
But don't you have good balconies? Or is this only, I only know this from Phantom of the Opera because then they say box five shall remain empty for the Phantom to see
oh,
the
I thing. Guess so. I
but
guess
I
so.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Okay, well, that's the pitch and I'm sticking
oh my
with
God.
It. Yeah, Villains on the Roof.
This spiraled out of control so wonderfully. I'm very happy about it.
I think we nailed it.
Yes, we did. Amazing.
Okay, so we got to map this out real quick as we're wrapping up this episode. This was episode 48, which is your last topic for the season. I got
Whoa,
49.
That's right. I forgot about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Glad
I got
picked
49.
A good one.
So it was a great topic. So next week, I'll bring the topic. And then episode 50, we're heading back to fan prompts to top it off. Mm-hmm. I just finished editing episode 45. Which was with all of your wonderful prompts. I gotta say, Cheese Wizards was way more unhinged than I remember it being.
Oh,
we get so into the weeds
do
with
I
that.
I want to know. That's
it is,
probably
it
my
is
fault.
So fun. So if oh you're listening God. To this, check out episode 45 and the episodes before it. I think we've had a great string of episodes.
Yeah, we're doing
for this
great.
Season. We definitely picked up the pace. Early on, we just woke up right before recording. But you know, with the right amount of rest. Right before, I think we got some great ones lined up. So
yeah, is this the moral of this episode?
Well,
sleep,
close
sleep,
us out,
people. Isn't that
close
always the moral?
Marla.
I feel like we always end up there. Okay. Having said that, thanks for listening, everyone.
Great segue.
This was great. It was good, right? Yeah, I'm such mm-hmm. a natural. So, as Dante just said, if you want to submit any prompts already, if your brain's spinning like ours is, please contact us at yourriversarewrong@gmail.com.
That's right.
Also, I guess we'll also just ask on YouTube and on our other channels for prompts as soon as we get there, right? Mm-hmm. But we're pretty early so far. So if you have any ideas, just hit us with that. We'd love to hear. Or if you have any critique or anything else, you know, if you want to say how your day was, I'd like that too.
Yeah.
Sure. I'll take it.
We'd love to know.
Yeah. And then there's the one thing we still need to discuss, which is that your rivers
that again?
Are wrong. Yeah, I think.
They're
yeah.
wrong?
Yeah, they're
wrong.
Pretty wrong. Yeah. I feel like we should fix this at some point, but I guess we'll get to that in the next episode.
Probably next episode.
Yeah. You'll hang out for another episode, right, guys?
Right?
Yay.
Okay. See you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of Your Rivers Are Wrong. If you have any thoughts for topics, prompts, or if you just want to share your thoughts, you can reach us at yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. That's yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. Big thank you goes to Martin Skelligans for our intro and outro music, and most importantly, thank you for listening. We hope to catch you at our next episode. Have a good one.